as we said this morning, our lesson tonight is on loving your enemies. And if that's not one of the toughest things that Jesus ever commanded us to do, I don't know what's much tougher than that. To love your enemy. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 43. You have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, sendeth his rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the publicans do so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. That's tough. Be perfect. Be always right in the way that we treat other people, by even loving our enemies. Now, there are two ways we look at that. Somebody might say, well, who's your enemy? And during the Cold War, people would say, well, that was Russia. All those communists over there in Russia, they were our enemies. And now, of course, they say that the terrorists are the enemies of the United States. And these things change who the enemies of our country are. And it's easy as Christians to sit here and say, you know, I'd like for all of those people in Russia to go to heaven. It's easy for us to even sit here and say, you know, I think it'd be good if Saddam Hussein went to heaven, or Osama bin Laden, if he was in heaven, that'd be good. Because we've never met those people. We've never had any dealings with those people. It's easy for us to say, we think it wouldn't have been good if Adolf Hitler could have been in. Wouldn't it be nice if we'd name whoever and say, well, you know, wouldn't it be nice if they could go to heaven, even though they're my enemy? Those aren't even people you know. I want to ask you, what about the person that you know? Maybe a neighbor, it may be a relative, it may be somebody who used to be a good friend, but something happened and you've now become enemies and you can't stand each other and you fuss and fight all the time, or you've quit talking to each other at all, and you... What about that person? What about that one? Oh, it's easy to say, you know, oh, somebody that I've never met, I want them to go to heaven. Wouldn't it be nice if they could be saved and go to heaven? But we're talking about people that are really your enemy. Not people that are the enemy of your country, or the enemy of, you know, maybe your, even some other relative's enemy, or the enemy of one of your friends, or anything. No, your enemy. The people who hate you and do mean things to you and say nasty things about you. What about that person? Because see, that's where it really makes a difference. I probably won't ever have the opportunity to even meet or to treat any of those other people that live all over the world in any kind of way. I'll never have an opportunity to impact the way they feel about me. They don't even know who I am. You know, we hear about them because they're on the news. They don't know who we are. They don't care who I am or who you are. What about the people that I do know? What about the person who keyed my car or slashed my tires? Or what about the person who stole your boyfriend or girlfriend, or the person who cheated on your husband, cheated with your husband against your, or all those kind of things? What about those people? What about the person who called everybody in the neighborhood and told some nasty rumors about you? What about those people? Those are the people that you know. You see them every day. You know who I'm talking about. You know the person. You see them in the grocery store. How do you treat them? What do? Do you pretend you don't see them and walk on? What does it mean to love your enemy? Love your enemy. Bless those who curse you. You ever tried to do that? You ever had somebody just cursing at you? And you try to say something nice to them? That's hard. That is hard. To try to say something nice to that person or about that person to someone else when they're just cursing you up and down. But that's what Jesus calls on us to do. Not just when it's easy and when we're never going to have to put our words into action. It's easy. Well, I love everybody. Love all those people over there in Russia and China and Africa and down in South America. I love all those people. What about your neighbor? You can't stand and won't talk to him, do nasty things to him and mean things to each other back and forth all the time. But you love all those people that... No, no. What did John say? How can you love God whom you haven't seen if you hate your brother whom you have seen? And that's what we try to do. It's easy to love those folks that are way off that we don't ever have to live with. That we don't ever have to deal with. But can we love the people that we have to have dealings with, even if they hate us? That's hard. That's where true Christianity has got to show itself. As he says, hey, everybody likes the people that like them. Everybody loves the people that love them. Everybody takes care of and says hi to the people that say hi to them and that are friendly with them. But what about the people that aren't? You know, sometimes we think that under the Old Testament law, things were different. You know, Jesus says, you've heard that it is said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And some people think that means that's what the Old Testament law taught, that you're supposed to hate your enemy. But that's not what the Old Testament law said. That's what some people had corrupted the Old Testament law to mean. Exodus 23 and verses 4 and 5, part of the Mosaic law, it says, if you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him again. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying under its burden and you would refrain from helping it, you shall surely help him with it. See, the Old Testament law even taught people, love your enemies. Now, that doesn't mean that you're always going to be friends with those people. They may not allow it. There are some things that are beyond your control, but the way you treat them is within your control. And he says here, if you see your enemy's property getting lost, they got an animal and it's wandering off, you go get it for them and bring it back. Now, you know, I know what you're thinking. You think, they're going to accuse me of stealing it if they see me with it. That may be. But you know what you were doing was right. That's the way enemies sometimes do. They'll turn any good thing into a bad thing. That may be. But he said, you help them. Doesn't mean y'all have to become bosom buddies and hang out together and spend time together and be the best of friends. That other person may not allow that, but you help them. You still do what you should do, what is right. And you do the same thing for the person that hates you that you do for your friend or relative or your neighbor. Then also Job 31, verses 29 and 30. Job, in talking about his own relationship with God and with others, he says, if I have rejoiced at the destruction of him who hated me, or lifted myself up when evil found him? Indeed, I have not even allowed my mouth to sin by asking for a curse on his soul. He said, even somebody that hates you, you don't even rejoice when they do suffer. And that's hard, isn't it? You want to see them get what's coming to them. And it's only just, and it's only right. They've treated me so bad, treated other people so bad, they deserve this. But Job says, I didn't rejoice at the destruction of someone even who hated me. Job was a righteous man. You remember God used him when he was talking to Satan. Have you seen my servant Job? Job's an example for us. We should not even rejoice when someone who is our enemy comes to destruction. Someone who hated us. Then we also need to understand that God will reward us if we treat our enemies well. Proverbs 25, verses 21 and 22. Solomon says, if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you. You know, the Lord will not reward us for returning evil for evil, just like is common in the world. He's not going to reward us for that. But when we can show good for those who have done us evil, we're commanded in the New Testament to treat our enemies with love. Now, notice that word, commanded. Someone said, well, I try not to be as bad as they are, but you know, that's just, we can't do that. It's a command. We're commanded. Romans 12:14 says, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Can you imagine? I've never been persecuted. You ever been persecuted? I mean really persecuted. I know we've had people say things about us or maybe even mistreat us in some way. And I know, you know, that I saw that coming. Y'all didn't. maybe you've had people discriminate against you for one reason or another. But I'm talking about persecution. I'm talking about the kind of things that Paul went through when he was beaten and thrown in jail, when he was stoned and left for dead. When we talk about persecution, that's what I'm talking about. Now, maybe you have. I haven't. I've never faced that kind of thing. But can you begin to imagine? You think about Stephen. There they were throwing stones at him. And what did he say? Forgive them. Don't hold this sin against them. Jesus was being crucified, and what did he say? Forgive them. Bless those who are persecuting you. I can't imagine going through that kind of a situation, being stoned or being crucified, certainly. I may get the chance to do more than imagine it before my life's out. I don't know. You never know what the Lord has in store for us. Paul, it was said of him that he would learn how much he must suffer for my name's sake, Jesus said. And he did have to suffer. And sometimes we don't know how much we may have to suffer for his name. But to be able, through that suffering, through that persecution, to say, Father, forgive me. To call blessings for them rather than curses. That is true Christianity. And that's a true example of someone being like Christ. Also there in Romans 12, verses 17 through 21, it says, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peacefully with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You know, we can see this in world events. It's not hard to see that when you try to get back even at somebody who's gotten you, it only escalates the problem. You look at what's going on with Lebanon and Israel right now. You know, one captures a covenant, and this one launches a rocket, and the other one launches two rockets, and the other one launches three rockets, and before it's an all-out war. That same thing happens in our personal relationships. First person calls somebody a dirty name, and so then the other person has to call them something worse. And then the other person has to up the ante by going after the other one's mother instead. And then, before long, punches are thrown. And then a knife pulled or a gun's pulled. And then a lot of cases, somebody winds up dead. All because they didn't learn that you've got to overcome evil, not with more evil, but with good. You can't destroy everyone in the world that hates you. You destroy yourself in the process. The old saying is made, the best way to get rid of your enemies is to turn them into your friends. And we know that's not always possible. That's why there in Romans 12, he says, if it is possible, as much as depends on you. You can't control the actions of another person, but as much as it depends on you, you live at peace. You live at peace. You can never control someone else's actions, but you can control your own. 1 Thessalonians 5:15 says, see that no one renders evil for evil to anyone, but always pursue what is good both for yourselves and for all. So we don't render evil for evil. In 1 Peter 3, verses 8 through 11, again, Peter also teaching this same principle. He says, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous. In verse 9, he says, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. If we're seeking peace, we're going to say things that will help bring peace. Remember what Solomon said? A soft answer turns away wrath. You yell back even louder at them and call them uglier names, you think that's going to make them feel nicer towards you. It never has worked, and it never will. A soft answer. Don't return evil for evil. Don't return reviling. You know, somebody says something nasty, don't turn back and say something nasty to them. Bite your tongue. And I mean physically, if you've got to, bite it. So, you know, that tongue is an unruly member, James tells us. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison, James 3:8. He says then in verse 10, out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Sometimes we do really need to just bite that tongue until it bleeds. So it'll just be quiet, be still a little bit. Because it wants to get into trouble. It's like a fire. I guess the wildfire is raging out there in California right now. Boy, those fires are hard to control. And the Bible compares this tongue to a fire. It says it's set on fire itself by the fires of hell. That's how dangerous that tongue is. You didn't know you had such a dangerous weapon in your mouth, did you? And that thing's deadly. It can destroy so quickly, just like a fire. But we've got to watch it. We've got to not return evil for evil, not speak evil. God will punish those who rejoice in the suffering of their enemies even. Proverbs 17 and verse 5 says, he who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. You ever been glad at somebody else's misfortune? You know, I know right after 9/11, they had all the video cameras having these little scenes of these little children in Palestine or Pakistan or Afghanistan or I don't remember now even which country it was there, but the little children were dancing around laughing, They made it out as though these children were rejoicing over what had happened. I think it later came out that those little children didn't even know what was going on. Those people told them if they jumped around and be happy, they'd give them some candy or something. But they filmed it that way to make it look like that's what was going on. But can you imagine being happy and excited about the bad things that happen to other people? We are sometimes with our enemies, though, aren't we? Our neighbors treated us dirty all these years, and then wind up, we find out he's getting foreclosed on. He's going to have to move out. Oh, isn't that great? I finally got what was coming to him. We do that. Somebody at work we didn't like, something happened, finally they got fired. I finally got what was coming to him. Not to mention the fact that now his family's going to be hungry because he's out of a job. But how often do we do that? We rejoice when other people face a calamity. We need to be careful. Even if it's those who are wicked, we need not rejoice in that. We may recognize even at times that it is punishment for wickedness. Sometimes that does happen. We may recognize that people do wicked things. They get the consequences. Whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. But that doesn't mean we rejoice over it. It means we try to warn those individuals, to try to help them to do better so that that doesn't happen to them. Now, a story is told about the two preachers, and the one could quoted scriptures, and it was so wonderful. And the fellow listened to it and said, "Well, he sure does preach." And then another fellow got up there and stumbled and stuttered and spat and sputtered along and struggled to get through it. And he was so caught up in emotion he could hardly finish the sermon. And the fellow said, "Boy, he cares about me." Well, what was the difference? Well, I said, the first fella, he told me that I was lost and on my way to hell, and he sounded like he was glad of it. But the second fella told me that I was lost and on my way to hell, and it broke his heart, I could tell. How many folks you heard, I'll see you in hell. Well, you attitude like that, you probably will. But why? Wouldn't it be better to say, "I'll see you in heaven"? Maybe we get houses on the same street. We get a mansion up there next door to each other. Why would we want to punish someone with eternal separation from God? Why would we ever want that for someone? Regardless of what they may have done, even to us. But I know it's easy to be angry when somebody's hurt you. It's easy. Proverbs 24 and verses 17 and 18 says, "Do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and it displease him and he turn away his wrath from him." He might turn it on to you. Now, you know what? Don't rejoice over those things. Loving our enemies is necessary in order for us to be children of God. Matthew 5, 43-48 that we just read tells us, Jesus said, you've heard all sorts of things. You know, all the different world religions teach different things about how you treat other people. And all of the people at that time had said different things about it. Jesus said, "You've heard these things. But I say to you, you love your enemies. You want to follow me? You want to be a Christian? You want to become a child of God? Love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." And that's the first step toward loving them, is praying for them. You see, because when we get away from the physical things that we're mostly fighting about, it's a physical confrontation most of the time. When we get away from that, and we start to be concerned about that individual's eternal destiny, and we realize that they're going to have to live somewhere for all eternity, their soul is going somewhere, one of two places, because that's all there are. When we start to think about, would I really want this person? Even as mad as they've made me, even as much mean things as they've done, would I really want them to have to suffer for eternity because of that? Well, if we can hold that kind of a grudge, and if we can wish that kind of an evil for that person, we may be suffering right along beside them. But it's possible that they may repent of their evil and go to heaven, and we'll be the ones suffering instead of them. Instead, we, like God, should be not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. We need to have that kind of attitude. Luke 6, 27 through 36 also tells these same things. And here, Jesus goes even further. In verse 29, He says, to him who strikes you on the one cheek, offer the other also. Oh, you ever tried that? You ever had somebody hit you? What do? Let them hit you again? That's what Jesus said, isn't it? He said, if he hits you, let him hit you again. What? Well, he started the fight, but I won't finish it. That's not what Jesus said. And the thing about it, Jesus practiced what he preached. When they struck him, he didn't strike back. Well, he was doing it for a higher reason. You know, he knew he had to sacrifice himself on the cross. He knew he had to do that for all of us. It doesn't matter that he had to do that for all of us. He's told us how to live. And I've heard some say, well, okay, they strike me once, and then I turn the other to them, and then they strike me. But then after that, I can really get them then. Once I give them those first two licks, then the rest is mine. That's not what Jesus is trying to teach us. He's trying to teach us not to retaliate with violence against violence. It doesn't help. It doesn't work. All it does is escalate the violence. You hit me, I hit you back. You hit me harder. You kick me, I kick you. And it's just going to go on and on. And you've known folks that have done this very thing. You may have been involved in a fight like that. And it goes on until one of you is beat so unconscious you can't get up to fight anymore. He goes on to say, though, and from him who takes away your cloak, don't withhold your tunic either. Somebody wants to rob you of your coat, give him your shirt too. You know how many people have died because they wouldn't give up something that somebody was trying to rob them? They wouldn't give it up, and they died. Because that thing was more important to them than their life. Jesus said, hey, somebody wants to take it, give it to them, and give them something, you know, give them more than they're asking for. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that the police don't get called in later to take care of a situation if you're talking about somebody. Right? But he said, somebody's going to take the... Hey, it's just a thing, isn't it? Is it worth your life? Give to everyone who asks of you. See that? Everyone who asks of you? You mean even those people that hate me, if they come up and ask me for something, I'm supposed to give it to them? Yeah. Everyone that asks of you. And from him who takes away your goods, don't ask them back. What? I don't know. Maybe Jesus is. Maybe y'all start to think Jesus is crazy. What's he talking about? Don't even ask them back. If somebody takes your stuff, you don't even ask it back. See, Jesus is trying to teach us that what we've learned in the world is just backwards from what will bring peace. Don't even ask them that. And then he goes on to tell us that we should do what we want them to do to us. You know, even drug dealers, prostitutes, thieves. Even they like each other when they get together. They join up and work together for things. He says, if you're doing the same thing, if you love those who love you, big deal. Even any kind of sinners can do that. Everybody loves it. If they love each other, they love it. Oh, yeah, we're good friends. He says, and where you show that you're a child of God is by loving even those who... You realize God so loved the world that He gave His Son. God loved. Even when we were unlovable, even when we were His enemies, He loved us so much that He allowed His Son to die for us. That's love. Jesus and Paul both left these examples for us, and we mentioned Stephen earlier. 1 Peter 2, verse 23, speaking of Christ, it says, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in turn. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. Jesus just put himself in the Father's hands and said, not my will, but your will be done. In 1 Corinthians 4, verses 12 through 13, Paul says, and we labor working with our hands. Being reviled, we bless. Being persecuted, we endure. Being defamed, we entreat. We have been made as the filth of the world, the offscouring of all things until now. The apostles were treated, really, they were treated like scum. Beaten, cursed, stoned, beheaded, thrown in prison. And for what? What horrible, terrible things did they do? Tried to tell people that God loved them enough to send Jesus. Well, that's terrible that they would go around telling people things like that. So terrible that they suffered because of it. But we have their examples to follow. Well, think about it. How do you treat your enemies? Do you feel a sense of satisfaction when your enemy suffers? Are you showing yourself to be a child of God by the fact that you've been born again? Are you showing yourself to be a child of God by the way you treat your enemy with love as God commanded us to? Notice he didn't just say, hey, you know, if you want to, you can treat your enemies this way. He said, this is what I'm telling you to do. You want to follow me? Then you treat your enemies this way. And when we read those things about what he says about how we are to treat our enemies, it's no wonder he says, take up your cross. That's tough. But we talked about this morning the fact that the tough things that God demands of us bring great reward. When we're fussing and fighting constantly with somebody, most of the time, I'm not going to say 100% of the time, because there's always an exception to every rule, because there's some folks out there that are just obsessed with causing trouble. But most of the time, we are doing something to keep the trouble going. Now, we may not want to admit that. We may not want to acknowledge that, but that's a fact. Most of the time, we're doing something to keep it stirred up, to keep the trouble going. Well, I didn't do anything. Yeah, you're doing something. We may mutter something under our breath as we walk away that keeps it stirred up. We may go say something to somebody else, and they gossip it back around, and it gets back, and it starts up again. Sometimes we may be doing something that we don't even realize we're doing. You know, we may be saying something or doing something that just for some reason puts that person off against us, and we may not even realize it. But if we can figure out what it is, boy, we need to stop doing that, don't we? To try to have peace as much as it's within your power. Have peace with all men. Yeah, there's some times where, you know, somebody just comes up for no reason and picks on somebody or tries to rob somebody or tries to hurt somebody for no reason. But most of the time, there's something been going on between those two. Most of the time. They say that most of the homicides in our country, I think it's something like 80 to 85% of them, it was somebody that the victim knew and had had dealings with in the past, had some kind of relationship. Apparently not a very good relationship, but they had some kind of relationship with that person in the past. But if you're here this evening and you're not a Christian, you have the opportunity to become one. And you can see by what we studied tonight, it's not an easy path. He never promised a bed of roses. What he did promise was a crown of thorns, a cross to bear. We've got to hear the gospel. Acts 2, verses 22 through 24 says that Jesus was a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, and that they had taken him by wicked hands, crucified and slain him. But God has raised him up, having loosed the pains of